So good morning, everyone. My name is Jim Livingston. I'm a program manager at Microsoft. I'm responsible for the design and planning of what we've done with Service Manager at Microsoft. So I assume you're all here to hear about what you can do with Service Manager, right? So how many of you have actually deployed or played with or tested Service Manager? Hey, good, good. Well, more than half of the people. So I'm going to cover both what we've done with Service Manager 12, how we got there from 10 to 12, but for the people in the room who haven't used Service Manager, also touch on just basically why we've done what we've done with Service Manager, how we've extended it, how we've gotten to where we are. But first, let me tell you a little bit about who we are. So we're part of MPSD, which is the monitoring platform service delivery team that works for Brad Anderson, the MSD vice president. So we basically, our team runs all of the major services that Brad is responsible for. And you can see the list here, Microsoft.com, Windows Update, MSDN TechNet, Azure Application Monitoring, Intune, and Security Essentials. So all of those services are run within our organization. And then the team I work on delivers the monitoring and management platform. So OM and SM are what all those teams use, and we build and run that platform. It's a total of about 7,000 plus servers that we're monitoring, and we get our volume alerts. We can hit 3,000 alerts a day. So one thing you'll hear about is how do we handle that many alerts? Obviously, if you just manually handled them all, it would be very difficult. So we've put some automation in, extended the service manager so that we can automatically route things and handle the volume with a reasonable number of people. So here's our environment. On the left-hand side are the six OM environments that input through connectors into Service Manager from Windows Update and Intune have their own separate ones. Azure Service is a separate OM environment, so any errors, any alerts that are thrown by an Azure application comes into that OM environment, comes into Service Manager. Keynote, you may be familiar with. It's an external third-party URL monitoring service. Many of our service operators, want multiple ways to monitor their system, kind of belt and suspenders approach, and so they'll set up Keynote to tests. And then the last one is URL monitoring, which is our own ops manager's URL monitoring capability, and those alerts will come in. So they all come into a single instance of Service Manager with the CMDB and the data warehouse behind it. And then in the upper right is what we call Ops Lite. So because we basically run it as a multi-tenant environment, each one of the partners is a separate environment, we need a way to know computer X, who's the owner, what application does it support, and I'll talk more about how we do that. So we import that data into Service Manager, and then the workflows have that information when they're processing it. I'll demonstrate and show you how that works. We use the Exchange connector because service requests can come in from both the portal and from email. It's about 50-50 division. The portal, which I'm going to demonstrate for you and show you how we use the new Service Manager portal. And then all the users, all the support engineers and people who use the portal are all come in and defined to Service Manager via an AD connector. So that's basically the environment. So some of the key things is I started planning for the migration from SM10 to SM12. Obviously, with these services, we can't have any downtime, we can't have any outages, so we've needed a seamless way to move from SM10 to SM12, and that's why it's a migration rather than an update. Also, that allowed us to move one partner at a time, and we could be sure that things were ready before we brought on our largest partners. The other thing we had to do is we had built a service request portal capability on SM10, and so we completely replaced that. And don't use that portal anymore and move to the new service catalog service portal that's built into SM12. We leverage the new service request type. In SM10, we'd actually used IRs, incidents, for service requests because service requests didn't exist. And I'll show you how we made that migration. Validated all the workflows and all the connections, and I'll spend a little bit of time talking about how we tested SM12 to make sure it would meet the requirements that we were already meeting in SM10. And then we added a whole new capability, which is self-service reporting via cubes. And we built a custom cube, and I'll show you how that works and why we had to build that, and delegate out so that each of the teams can produce their own reports. We don't want to be in the reporting business. We just want to build the cubes and let people report themselves. So first, the good news. We have about 24 management packs that we had built on top of SM10. We imported those all into SM12, and without exception, they all worked. So the product team has done an amazing job maintaining compatibility from SM10 to SM12. Those of you who've been around a long time, that's always a pleasant surprise. But the management packs came in. But there were a number of changes we had to make, primarily because we had done extensions in SM10, such as overloading IRs to create service requests, to create a service request environment. We redesigned some of our property extensions. And so in those cases, the views, workflows, and templates, we needed to go back and make those updates there. Not so much that they're required from going to 10 to 12, but we took that opportunity to kind of re-architect things. We also found in SM10 that we had overused workflows. Now, the good news is the workflow engine in Service Manager is really good. It allows you to send notifications, auto-route things, email people if an alert hasn't been responded to in a certain time. That's all built in. It works very well. And we had gotten up to almost 80 or 90 workflows within the system. And workflows can be fairly expensive. So we again took this time to kind of go through and consolidate a lot of our workflows, try to get down to the minimum number, and we got down to below about two dozen, which is where I'm really comfortable with it. It has less impact on performance. Things had just worked, so we had predefined special tasks, the right-hand panel, and you'll see from the demo. Roles, we use roles to define and separate all of the different teams that are in there, so when a user from Intune logs into the system, he only sees the alerts and only sees the views that his team have set up with us, and that's done with roles. All the lists that are in there, again, for different teams have different categories and different things, and subscriptions. That stuff all just worked. We imported the new management pack, went through basic validation and testing, and so I was very pleased with the compatibility. There is a new feature in the AD connector. We'd always used the AD connector, but for those of you who've used it, you'll know it didn't handle groups in SM10. It now handles groups in SM12. If people want to join our system, they just join their security group, and boom, they're automatically defined in Service Manager, and that allows us, as people come and go from the different support teams, it's automatically managed within Service Manager. So now the development work we had to do. Kind of a wordy slide, but I'll kind of go through what we had to do here. So a couple things we wanted to do. We have a sync service. So we have that OpsLite database, so the database where we define, the ACID information, and that tells us what application this computer supports, who the support engineers are, what knowledge base articles are associated with a particular alert from a particular application. We had a sync service that brought that in, and it ran every 20 or 30 minutes. And it was putting a pretty big load on our system. So we redesigned it so that it only brings in the data that is critically to be updated at a short period of time, and the other data can be run more in a batch process overnight to put less load on the system. Because as you'll see, we push Service Manager right to its limits in terms of capacities and console usage. And so we're always cognizant of tuning everything for performance. Our incident processor, so that's a workflow that runs every time an alert comes into the system and basically takes our custom information and maps it to the IR or now to the SRs. We had to extend it, so we do both incidents and service requests. The strategy of the reason we have that workflow there is when a service engineer opens an incident in Service Manager, everything he needs is right there. So, and you'll see from the demo, so we've extended the form, so he knows who the owner is, he knows what the application is, obviously knows what computer it came from. Any knowledge base article that the application owner says, hey, for these problems, this is the process they're supposed to, is right there. And in our previous system, before we went to Service Manager, we had three different tools that the engineers had to keep the tools all open and basically do all that themselves. This has worked extremely successfully for us, reducing the amount of time it takes the level one engineer, tier one engineer, to either resolve the problem or route it, improving our abilities to notify owners for certain alerts, send them email notifications. All that has been greatly improved since moving to Service Manager. So inside Microsoft, we're very email-centric. There's a lot of teams that want email notifications as well as the sending the alert to their support group. So we added a capability called Send Outlook Mail. That's a task. What it does, it takes a copy of the incident or service request, puts it in the email, and you can select a template. So a lot of pre-canned information can be predefined, and they pulls the template, creates the email message, and then sends it off to the other engineers or service owners or whoever that they want to send to. And then that email is recorded in the action log, and I'll show you this in the demo, so that we have a email, that any email discussion is recorded with the IR. Talked a little bit about, we did also redesign the incident processor so it's a web service. Initially we had designed it so it was just a section of code that ran within the workflow. And by doing this, that made the workflow extremely light. So basically when the workflow fires on every IR coming into the system, all it does is place a message on the web service and say, here, you need to process this. And that has better enabled us to handle alert floods, because we can get floods of alerts from some of the applications we support, ranging up to 500 alerts a minute. And the workflows would tend to fall behind, and in some cases time out, which is we miss our SLAs when we hit that point. So since moving to this, where we use a web service as the workflow processor rather than the workflow itself, we don't get any timeouts, and that's been a big improvement. I mentioned we replaced, replaced our service catalog with the new service request portal and service request type. And I'm going to talk more about it, is we added dynamic routing to the system. So you have to, have to imagine we have about 500 total support engineers across 9 different organizations, and those alerts come in. If we just had people doing this, routing them off, one, it'd be expensive. And so we've added a dynamic routing capability to Service Manager, and I'll show you how that works. So now, I think a picture is worth 1,000 words. Let's see if my demo is going to work. Yeah, there we are. You'll recognize the Service Manager 2012 console. Very similar. Again, one of the easy changes from 10 to 12 is the support engineers looked at the new console and went, oh, it's basically the same. What's different is we've added down here the service request view, and I'll get to that in just a minute. Let me first kind of show you how we've extended the system. So I'll open a... Actually, I think I have one open already. Yeah, okay. So I'll open an incident. And this one's come from Ops Manager into the system. And let me go first to the general tab, so you'll recognize that. So title and description you're all familiar with. If you go down in here, here's the support group. All that's pretty standard. But we make heavy use of the action log. So since we have an automated workflow that processes every alert or every incident or service request that comes into the system, all of our automated workflows record what they do in the action log. So in this case, it came in, and the incident processor said what it did, said it found a route, so it's going to auto-route it. It looked up the engineers that are associated for this particular application and assigned them to the service, to the incident. Routing completed, so it's completed all of its routing. And then all the support engineers will use this too. So typically you'll see comments in here, from a tier one person said, I ran through the KB article that I was supposed to, I did those 4 or 5 steps, I've still not resolved the problem, and I'm routing it up to a tier two. So they'll use the action log to talk to each other. And as I said, they'll use the send outlook mail. In many cases, it's kind of an engineer-to-engineer discussion, or in some cases, some of our service owners for some alerts want to be notified and it takes a copy of the whole thing. Again, then anybody in mail gets a full copy of the action log so they can see what's going on. So that's been very successful for us. So extended the system. We've added the information tab. And this is actually pretty easy to do. You use the authoring tool, and you can extend the view here, and you can extend the classes are all done in an authoring tool. It doesn't take a development level knowledge to be able to do it. I did most of them myself. And so in our case, we have 5 levels of engineers. That is the escalation path. We wanted to add event ID and event source because most of the support engineers will often go in and sort by computer and an event ID, and it quickly kind of gives them a view of you know, what's going on. Is this an event that's happening on a lot of computers, or are we seeing multiple ones from one computer? And so we've added that to the system, so that's an extension. We also added the computer name here, so again, it can be in a view, and so they can look at that information and sort on it. I mentioned the asset map, so that's what this is. In our OpsLite database, it's a tree structure that defines, you know, where in the bottom of leaves are computers, and so that tells what application or what level in application is a SQL application, all the way up to MS-COM or Intune or you know, anti-malware operations. And so, again, the support engineer looks at that and he goes, I know where it came from, I know what application it's affecting. And here's where, if he wants to email it, they select the email template. There's a lot of predefined templates. This has worked well, where if you just standardly send something to somebody, all that text is predefined, or if you mail things off to the owner, service owners. So those are the basic extensions we put into the system. The alert details is added for URL monitoring. So for those of you who use URL monitoring, you'll notice that those alerts tend to have a lot of detail information. And so rather than just overload the description field, we break them out and we put them in here just for URL alerts, both from Keynote or from our own OM environment. So let's go down and look at a service request. Let me click it. Close this one. All right, so there's a service request. I have some assigned to me. Oh, that's right, I can't do that. Where did I want to do? What view did I want to do here? Monitoring and management. So I'll look at our service request. So one thing you'll notice too here is you notice there's a lot of views. That's because I'm an administrator. As I mentioned, we use roles. So if I'm from in the Intune team or if I'm the anti-malware team and I log in here, I'm hit by those roles and I see about a tenth of these views. And then we work with each of those teams to see what kind of views they want. And it's very easy to create views for a manager. You know, show me all the alerts in the last week that exceeded SLA. He can quickly look at that and he can see what engineers will work on them and take the necessary action. But it's a little more complicated, or it looks more complicated when you're an administrator. Okay, so these are service requests that are actually sent to our team, the monitoring and management team. Couple things you'll notice here. The status, we expose the status field here, and new mail. So that was a case where the service engineer sent mail off to somebody else, and then when that person replies to it, that mail comes back and is recorded in the action log and changes the status to new mail. So a lot of support engineers will set up a view, you know, service request assigned to me, you know, where status is new mail, and they can quickly see whether somebody has responded to them, and that's worked very well. Oops, that's a Keynote one. That's probably not what I want. Come on. Okay, so service request forms look a lot like incident forms. Many of the things are the same. General tab, has action log in it that we use in the same way. You can see the action log. There's the description. A couple things that are different are service level. And so we set, and I happen to open one that's breached, but we set service levels for all service level agreements for all SRs that come into the system based on priority. Priority 1, priority 2, priority 3 have different time frames. And so unlike SM10, the support engineer immediately sees whether his service level has been breached. That information goes into the data warehouse, and you can pull reports on it. So whether you're meeting your service level, that's worked very well for us. The information tab is, again, an area where we've extended the system. And these are just basically features that different support team wants. You notice we have other ticketing systems throughout Microsoft, so they can select one of those and associate ticket numbers. We expose the status field because, as you can see, we have lots of extended status fields, status information that's in there. And I'll explain to you how that affects reporting in the back end. We also allow them to change the request offering. So this is the case where a service request came in that the person didn't really select what they wanted. Support engineer will have an email discussion with them. They can go ahead and change it to the one that they wanted, take action on it, and continue it. And we added category and SO information here. So again, trying to focus so that when the support engineer opens it, everything he needs is right here, and he doesn't have to do anything else, and he can just focus on solving the problem or taking the action. So, what are we doing for time? All right, so dynamic routing. This has been a key addition to the system. And the basic business challenge, again, was we have some support teams that want some alerts to go immediately to them. In other words, bypass a tier 1 and just go right to a tier 2 or even to a tier 3 based on event ID or title or description, something like that. And we have some teams that don't even use our tier 1, that use their own tier 1 teams. So those alerts just immediately go to those two tier 1 teams. And so the way we did that, in our OpsLite system, anywhere within their application tree structure, they can go in and create a route. And a route can be, you know, contains in the title or description, event ID, event source, on the computer, or anywhere in the asset structure. So like a good example is, let's say the Intune team is bringing up like the beta that they released this morning. They've had those servers running for quite a period of time, and they've just been testing them. So we don't want those alerts to come in and go to our tier 1 because that's not a production environment yet. Yet the Intune team wants to see those alerts because they're trying to evaluate if they're production systems. So that's a good example where they would go in, create a route on that set of assets, then automatically route them to their support group. They can look at them and take necessary action on them, pull reports on them, and so you can monitor what's happening. So test systems, event IDs where certain application owners will say, hey, if you see this event, get it to me immediately and skip some of the tier 1 steps. So those are the kind of two common areas that routing are done. And it's all self-service. The support engineers build these routes on their own. Okay, so creating a service catalog. This is probably the biggest change and the biggest opportunity, in my opinion, within Service Manager 12. And it presented a couple interesting problems that I'm kind of going to walk through. One, we already had a fairly sophisticated service request structure within Microsoft. And as a matter of fact, there was about 400 predefined service requests built in, and then we had built the portal where they could go in and select an application and a sub-application, and the request type, you know, was fairly straightforward. And when I first sat down with the different support engineer teams, and I created a prototype service catalog, you could just tell the lights didn't go on. The service offering, request offering, the new terms and concepts didn't map to what they were doing. So to solve that problem, I working with a developer, created some PowerShell scripts. We unloaded the existing 400 service requests into Excel, and then created some PowerShell scripts to take the Excel spreadsheets and dynamically build a service catalog. So I then went back to them and said, okay, you know, you currently have 50 service offerings, and this is how they'd be organized. You'd end up with these service offerings and then request offerings, and I'll demo this for you in just a minute. And then the light bulbs went on. They went, oh, I see how this catalog will work. And you know, it seems like I need to reorganize and rethink my offerings, which was the point I really wanted to make with them. So taking your existing data, putting it out there as kind of a prototype, I think really helped people understand the power of the service catalog. And you can do that in spreadsheets with some fairly straightforward PowerShell scripts. The other thing I found in building a service catalog is it's a very iterative process. You load some data in it, they'll look at it, they'll play with it in the test environment, and they'll come back. And I would say about half of our teams took the opportunity to basically reorganize their service offerings in the new structure, making it more powerful. So the way the spreadsheet worked, there's a number of options, and we'll go through and spend some time on this. So you've got the service offering is the top, the category is the top level, and we set up category for one for each of the major teams, so we have 9 of them. Under that, you have the service offering icon, and then the request offering. And so the spreadsheet has those in columns and just automatically builds them. And then you have the questions, and you can have text questions, list questions, date field questions, indicator questions, so you can fill those in, select the type that you want. And then probably the hardest part about it is doing the mapping back to the properties. And that's what's confusing for people. I originally thought, well, have the different teams do it, and I gave up on that approach. I just had them fill out the basic part of the spreadsheet, service offering, request offering, and questions. And then with some members on my team, we did the mapping ourselves because it was kind of too hard for people to get. So let's. How am I doing on time? I think I'm going too fast. Okay. All right. So for those of you who haven't seen it, this is what the service request portal looks like. As I mentioned, the top level there, desktop management services, you know, EPX, you know, hosting, monitoring and management is our team. Those are the category levels, and we use it basically for each of the major organizations within our group. The service offering is the top level icon. Notice it has a description with it that if you just hover over it, you see the description. I'm going to go down and use one of ours. And see, you can add some pretty complex description. One comment on the icons. Don't show me this message again. So if I select the service offering, I'll get back a list of request offerings. And so this is the part, oops, F11 is what I want to hit, right? Shoot. To control F11 or what? Why am I not getting it? Yeah, okay. So anyway, so you have service offerings underneath. You can see our list of request offerings. And I'll just select one of those. And then for each request offering, you have a list of one or more questions. So I'll go ahead and form. This area is interesting, and we've just started to roll it out. There's a capability to associate knowledge base articles that are in Service Manager right with the individual request offering. And some of the teams are starting to do that. What they're seeing is that certain requests are fairly complicated. And what the in our original system, before we moved to Service Manager, the support engineers told me that they averaged 5 emails back to the requester getting all of the information complete before they could actually take the action. And obviously, that's expensive, and it's slow, and it's not very satisfying to the requester. So they're starting to add knowledge base articles here. Basically, you say, hey, if you're doing this request, read this article first and try to get better information to the requester and get a better request coming in. So you can see you can have required questions. You can have lists. again, lists. I've used select the answer. The way it works is the first entry in the list is the default, and so I use select answer to try to force people to select, you know, that we want them to select something. What request type is it? I'll say it's a delete. Next. I think our largest request offering has about 15 questions. The typical is 4 or 5. You can type in text, type in name. You can have date fields, completion date. Then you get a summary and hit submit. And I'm not going to, because this is actually our live production question, and the support engineer that it gets routed to is going to wonder what the heck Jim Livingston is doing sending this incomplete, stupid service request. And I'll hear back from them because they know where I am. You can always back up or can just hit cancel. So the left-hand side here, left-hand on your side, you can add links. And so we're planning to expand this in the future, links to other types of systems that are associated, links to descriptions. And one thing we're going to add is we're going to add a description of overall service offerings for each team, so you can read about that. And so, in short, we're almost completely rolled out to the new service catalog. We're almost 100% on SM12. The things I've observed is that we've greatly improved the quality of the requests coming into the support engineer. It's just better questions. It's richer questions types using the knowledge base articles. We're getting better questionnaires filled in, and that allows the support engineer not to have to keep going back to the person and be able to do the request quicker, because he's got all the right information the first time. And that's getting, you know, we're seeing good satisfaction back on the person who requested it. So it's kind of a win-win. It's cheaper for us because the support engineer gets better information, and it's better for the requester because they filled out a form, send it in, and the next thing they know, they get a notification that it's been completed. The way we set up the system is when you send in a request from the service, from the portal, and it works the same way if you sent the request in from email, you get a notification back saying, thank you, we've received your request. This canned text varies from different group. You know what your SR number is. And I could come in here, and my requests. And so I could come in here and look at one, if that one's closed. And so I could add comments to this. One of my favorite DCRs that I design change requests that I open with the product team is to make it a list here, because I figured 9 times out of 10 the user input would be, have you completed this yet? So I figured we might as well just make it a list. But they rejected that change. But it does allow people to see the status. In this case, I could come in and see that my request has been closed and completed. I could send email to the support engineer. I could put a comment here, which would go right into the service request. And so that's all worked very well for us, too. Okay, so now I'm going to kill this thing. So now let me, y'all, show you the other side of service requests. So under library, here's service requests and the service offerings that are defined in the system. I'll start with just a service request. Again, notice that we're using views here. And so if the different teams were to look at their service catalog, they would only see the service requests and service offerings associated with them. We do that with roles and with views. System must be very busy today. Okay. So here's where I would define or make changes to a request offering. Title, fairly straightforward. Add an icon, the description fields, the template associated with it, management packets in, and there's the list of questions and the types of questions that are appropriate, that are necessary. And so, as you can see, if I select on this, I can have, you know, file attachment, integer, queries, and enumerations. So the enumerations are standard lists that we add to Service Manager, like domain, which is the same list we use all across all of our services. You can have simple lists, which are more commonly used. And a simple list is a list that will just be built into this service request. So if one team has 5 priorities and another team has 3 priorities, fine. We just implement them as simple lists, and they're unique to each different team. So there's a lot of flexibility here. You know, I mentioned required versus optional field. You can even have display only, so it's a good place to put some information on the form saying, you know, if you're making this request, please do X, Y, and Z. There's also a place, form instructions up here, that puts text on the top of the form. So again, as we've rolled this out, but as teams are using it and the service teams are getting more comfortable with it, they're going back and adding more richer information to try to, with the overall goal of improving the quality of the request so that they can act on it sooner. Sure. Yes. So this entire service catalog was built from a PowerShell script coming from the Excel spreadsheet. Well, I've turned them back over to the product team, and that's their choice whether they want to release them on CodePlex or not. Plus, I think some of the MVPs within Microsoft have them. So I'm not announcing I'm making them available to you, but talk to your account team and product team and see if they can get them available. I found them very useful. So kind of going through this, so knowledge-based articles, so if you were to add an article that I talked about, that's done there. And then requests can be either be published or unpublished, so you can have drafts as you've got things going in. And then like everything in Service Manager, there's a comprehensive history, so you can always look at it. Somebody changed something, was there a mistake? And primarily we use the history for debugging purposes to try to figure out, you know, who changed what or what went wrong. But pretty straightforward to set up a service offering, request offering, set up your questions, and boom, you're online. All right, so now let's go. How am I doing? I need to slow down. So a couple integration points and kind of some of my experiences. So the integration with Ops Manager, super straightforward. You just set up a connector. As you saw from our configuration, we actually have 6 different Ops Manager environments. Service Manager 12 connects both through Ops Manager 7, 2007 and 2012 simultaneously. Connected all the different environments. So that part's easy. Matter of fact, in general, probably one of the biggest strengths in Service Manager is the connectors, the AD connectors and the CM connectors and OM connectors all work extremely well. They're super easy to set up. We did build in some automation. So one thing I find is... how do you process? We get in, 3,000 alerts a day. Not all of them are actionable. So how do we deal with that? Well, the automatic routing has helped us so that when people have alerts that are going just to their kind of for information queues, we've written PowerShell scripts to auto-groom that at a faster rate. So in Service Manager, there's grooming parameters. And when I say grooming, when something's groomed out of the system, it leaves the CMDB. It stays in the data warehouse. And so we typically keep incidents after they've been closed in Service Manager for about 15 days. And then the data warehouse, for reporting purposes, will keep them for up to a year. And those are 2 separate SQL databases. But because we have all these alerts going and being routed in different places, we've written PowerShell scripts to go in and auto-close and mark for immediate grooming. So like, for example, that example where Intune was sending me hundreds and hundreds of alerts on their, quote, test system. They wanted to see them. I said, fine, create a route, no problem. And then we set our auto-grooming scripts to auto-close them because they're not really looking at them, so they're sitting there active. And if they sit there active, then they're going to be in the system forever. So we look at the informational support queues, run as PowerShell script against it every day, and close them after 5 days and mark for immediate grooming. So rather than the 15-day grooming period, so boom, we get the IRs out of our system. We've had to do this in order to keep the total volume of IRs down. Right now, we're running at about 50,000 IRs in the system. On SM10, we hit peaks of 185,000. which is about double what Service Manager is recommended to do. So the little guy holds up really well under some pretty heavy loads, but a grooming structure or design, I think, is important to add to the system. A couple things in here, too, if you go looking for it. So the event ID and the event source is something our support engineers really needed, and so we added that to the system. So that incident processor that runs against all the alerts that come into the system calls back to Operations Manager and gets that information. I think you'll find that your support engineers may want that, and that is a design change that's in front of the product team, and we're hoping to get it in the next service pack. Oh, and the new SM12, so last bullet here is, in SM12, they've greatly improved the management packs that monitor Service Manager. So when grooming events fail, when workloads fail, you now get alerts coming into Service Manager that can be acted on in a proactive way. Particularly grooming is something that you want to watch, because if it were to start failing every night and you don't know about it, your system's going to start filling up, and there's not any good way in the UI, so you need to get an alert. So they've greatly improved the monitoring of the system. One of the things that we're starting to add is, if Service Manager is starting to fail for whatever reason, and it's been very, very reliable for us, but it can fail in certain things, sending alert back into Service Manager is not necessarily the best way to be proactive. And so what we're doing is we're writing monitors in OM, we're changing the monitors in OM so that OM will send us email if Service Manager is having certain problems. And again, that way we can be more proactive to monitor. Basically, you're monitoring the monitoring system. So reports. SM10 basically didn't have much of a reporting capability. It was one of the limitations we were delighted to see that the product team solve. And the way this works is we use two ways to produce reports: cubes, a cube that we wrote, and SQL Service Reporting Services. That's what SSRS is. So it's very easy to go into Service Manager and set up a report, by this type, by date ranges, by category, by support group, and typically each of our support teams will kind of say, hey, I'd like these two or three types of reports. Those we may do as SSRS reports. The cube we use for all our time to repair and time to resolve and SLA breaching reporting. And for those of you not familiar with a cube is just a SQL Server Analytical Services capability. So it runs in SQL Service. And so we had to build our own cube primarily because of the extensions we made to the system. So since we use support statuses fields that are not built in, an example is on hold pending customer reply, a common one in the service request. We had to build our own cube so that TTR for that subtracts that period of time. So a correct TTR would be, when did it come into the system? It went from tier one, it went to tier two, somebody put it on hold, and then it got it resolved, and you subtract that time. That required us to build a custom cube. The custom cube was about a month and a half's work, and it does take developer level, SQL development level knowledge. We also added our own ETL. So ETL is extract, translate, and load. And so every 5 minutes, an ETL job runs against the CMDB, so the data where all the IRs and SRs, and copies it to the data warehouse. One of the problems we found is we want to know precisely when it came into the system, you have a create date, and went to support group one and was there for a period of time and then went to support group two. Well, you can envision a problem. If you're only tracking that data every 5 minutes, it would be possible to come into the system, tier one immediately knows it wanted to go to another tier, and you wouldn't see that it was in tier one. So we wrote our own ETL job to track that information and record it in an extended field so we know every support group that's been hit and how long that service request stayed in the support group. That allows us to produce reports on, as SR came in, what's the average time in Tier 1, what's the average time in Tier 2, etc. And, you know, we have lots of different groups. We do use the built-in measures and dimensions. We added a few based on our extended statuses and extended tier queues, but we basically use the built-in measures and dimensions and the fact tables that are built in are all pretty straightforward. A couple of the challenges we've had with cubes is they're a little complicated for the average person to use. I would say about a third of the support teams I work with saw it. The people were very familiar with analytic services, and they were off and running, and I hardly had to talk to them at all. About two-thirds of our group were just used to kind of running a query against a database, getting data into Excel, and producing their own reports. And the measures and the fact tables can be a little confusing. The way we solved that problem is we created what I call a data dictionary and a lot of samples. So if I wanted an SSRS report, if I wanted a service request report for these three support queues across time for this asset information, so I created those samples for them, gave them the Excel spreadsheet, which is where the samples are, and then gave them a data dictionary to say, hey, if you want to do it by user as opposed to time or time different users, you have the data dictionary. And I think we're in pretty good shape, people kind of moving to a self-reporting service. Because we don't want to be in the reporting business. We want to let everybody just do their own reports in any way they want, slice the data any way they want. I think I went too fast. So, in summary, and I'll have plenty of time here for questions, the service catalog, I think, is a tremendous improvement to the system. It's a very rich way to set up requests coming into the system. It's extremely flexible, and the migration to it was super smooth. Matter of fact, we've gotten almost no feedback that there were problems moving to it. It's robust, and it handles a large number of people, and it's used entirely across Microsoft. So any Microsoft employee can just type in MPSD portal and select the service offerings they want and submit the requests, and they go out to all the different teams. Compatibility was also very good. As I mentioned, 24 management packs, all of our code, most of our processes all just worked. If it weren't for the extensions we'd made to add service requests to it that we kind of had to unwind and then move to the new way, we probably would have had very little development work going from 10 to 12. Connectors are definitely a strength. We use AD, Ops Manager, Config Manager connectors now. We've tested the Orchestrator connector. So the Orchestrator connector connects to Orchestrator and brings runbooks into the system. And one of the next phases that we're looking at is automating the service request process. Let me explain how that would work. So you got a service catalog, and you select your request offering, and it comes into the system. And in our initial analysis, we've figured about 20% of those requests, some support engineer just runs a script, you know, completes the task, goes to the service offering, says it's complete and done. So what you would do is for that service request, you'd add an activity. The activity would be the runbook, and it would literally, the service request would come into the system, automatically see that it's got an activity, it would run the PowerShell script or script, completed, close, and send email back to the person. So instead of having a person in between there, you could just automatically do it. And we've piloted that. We're starting to look at some of those. You can also add an approval step. So again, the request comes in. Step one is approved by your manager. It would send an email notification to the manager saying, please go to the portal. You have an approval process. You have approval awaiting for you. They would approve it. The next activity would be to run the task. And you can have multiple activities, as you saw in some of the other demonstrations, as many activities as you want. That they would just run and complete it. So that's kind of one of the next phases, I would say, now that we've got the service catalog rolled out, is can we automate a lot of these processes? And the performance is also greatly improved. Keep in mind, 3,000 alerts a day, 500 support engineers, So Service Manager clearly handles some very large volume, and that's a single system. The only thing, as I mentioned, be aware of is, you know, pay attention to your grooming. If your volumes are high, if you're anywhere near as high as ours, you need a good grooming structure and architecture in place. And the cubes have generally worked well. At least there's a built-in self-service reporting capability in Service Manager that you can delegate out. And if you're not doing many extensions like we do, the built-in cubes will probably just work for you. I think there's IR and SR and activity cubes that come with the system. So I don't know what the prizes are for this one, but I think there are some prizes out there. I think they're auctioning off the mugs that were used in the demo. So I'll stop and leave a few minutes, 15 minutes or so, for questions. Any questions? There's one on the right.
There are some issues with the current version of the portal, especially it being a Silverlight portal. Mm-hmm. And I talked to Travis, and he said that we should wait for MMS to see some kind of a roadmap for the continued development of Service Manager. Do you have anything you can release to the public about that yet?
I work closely with the product group, and I'm sure I'll be involved in the discussions, but no, I mean, they haven't. I don't think they've made any decisions on that. From my point of view, so I think your point was it's a Silverlight portal. That has several benefits. It's very configurable. So if, remember, you've seen from the demo, I can add links to the side. I can change the font size. I can change the size of the form. I could even write my own web part if I wanted to do something very customized. We didn't need to. And so the fact that it's built on Silverlight and SharePoint, I found a benefit. I mean, it just made it easier for me and very easily to go in and customize it to do what I want. The performance is fairly good. As you can see, it was pretty snappy to go through and create a request offering. So it'll be interesting to see what the product team chooses to go forward.
Yeah, I could probably talk a couple of hours about the issues with it, but I won't bother the audience here.
I'll spend some time afterwards if you want to talk about it.
Yeah, I have one more question. The help article portion of Service Manager 2012, all you can do is make it open a RTF document. Is there any plan on opening a separate website or anything else?
I think your statement is not correct. We use both Word documents and Excel spreadsheets, and you have the choice. So the way it works is there's a knowledge base article section in Service Manager, and you go in there, create knowledge base article, you give it a title, you give it some keys to search on, and you can store text there. And I believe you're correct, that's RTF. That's for internal. You can also do an external link, which is what we do, and store all of our knowledge base articles in SharePoint. And there it can be Word, Excel, anything, and it just externally opens it. From the end user's point of view, it's all seamless. Oh, from the portal. Not from, I'm talking about from the console. You know, I don't know about that. I'd have to go look and see how that would work. Yeah. Question?
My question has to deal with the console users. Obviously, you guys scale up to a large number of users. But when you have X number of concurrent users, what do you have to factor in terms of memory resources, in terms of processor? I mean, at what point do you need to look at adding extra horsepower in terms of another virtual machine and that kind of stuff?
So, all right, so the question, I guess you can hear the question. So how do you scale it from a console usage? So we recommend that everybody install the console, so all the support engineers install the console locally on their desktop, and it works like any other application for them. It's a half a gigabyte of memory, so it takes up a fair amount of memory, but it runs on any typical Windows 7 desktop. We do run 3 Service Manager front ends. So we've configured our environment. We have 3 Service Manager front ends that are NLB load balanced. So when the support engineers are coming in, they're automatically rotated between the 3 front ends. You have the CMDB behind it, which we cluster for, we have a failover there, and then the data warehouse behind that. and then two SharePoint environment, a SharePoint environment with their failover that runs the service catalog. So I think there's a total of 9 servers in our environment, and with SM12, there are 7 of them are virtual machines. The only 2 that are not virtual machines are the 2 SQL databases, because we wanted more procs and more memory than VMs on Windows 7 can handle. And with Windows 8, we'll probably move those to VMs. So I've had no trouble virtualizing the environment. Question.
My question is in regards to having different user communities that are putting in requests. What are the best way to track and do reporting on the communities that are putting in the request? How many requests and incidents are coming from each community?
So it's almost built into the system. So if it's a service request, then the category, which is built into your reporting. So if I'm in the Intune group, I would go pull a report for all service requests, send to category Intune, and then I know those requests are just for me. For email requests, where you get very little automation, those go to a tier one team, and then there's a category built into the service request, and so then they would assign it. Oh, this is a request to this team, so they'll set the category manually again, making the reporting and all that kind of that just work correctly.
To make it a little more complex, what if we're using the same set of categories for all of the user buckets and that's not available? So everyone might be requesting a new hardware deployment, but we need to keep track of marketing, finance, sales as separate.
So I understand your question. So the category on the service request portal is the top level, and so we do that at the team level. And underneath those might be, in each team, they may have the same basic request offering or service offering, and they can have duplicate names. So that works fine. And so that's, as a matter of fact, that's typical. You know, I mean, probably every one of the teams has report incident request offering, and that's fine. But by category, it'll go to the right group, and it's reported on correctly.
And we can report at the top level of the category.
Absolutely. We can report at any level. So I can pull a report that says, for category Intune, for request offering, new request, how many did I get in the last week, what support engineers worked on it, and what was the TTR to resolve. And those are all just done either with an SSRS report or with a cube.
Thank you.
Next.
It didn't look like you guys use SSL on the web portal on this demo. Do you guys not use SSL on there? And then is the login transparent, or are the customers prompted for like a login credentials to the web portal?
So I didn't understand the first part of your question, so let me answer the second part. So we authenticate, since a number of our partners can receive service requests from all Microsoft employees, so we set up the portal to be available to all Microsoft employees. You don't have to do it that way. You could subset it in any different way you want, using AD credentials. But basically, any Microsoft employee just types in MPSD portal and it will pop up and they can submit a request.
And you guys don't use HTTPS on the main portal site, because it didn't look like when you brought it up it was going to like a secure site.
Yeah, I don't think it's a secure site. We don't have a need for it to be a secure site. Question?
Hi. I'm trying to determine when I would use an orchestrator runbook versus a service manager workflow, and I wanted to see if I have the right concept. And it looks like the service manager workflow is about the routing of the task, and the orchestrator runbook is about the automation of the actual work. Is that the right concept?
You've got it exactly right. I mean,
Do you use Orchestrator?
We've tested Orchestrator and piloted it in a few places, and are looking. That's kind of the next phase to look it out. My boss is sitting right down here, and his priority was to get everybody on SM12 by this conference, and we got about 90% of it done. The last team moves next week. And then we're going to go back and look at Orchestrator. A couple of things we want to look at is the problem management and change management capabilities. See if we want to roll those out as a service, because everything we deliver is basically as a service. So we build it in there. But to just drill into the workflow, so the basic built-in workflow engine is really good for like sending an auto email reply back saying, I got your request, and loading a specific template depending on who it came to. Sending notification if an alert exceeded its SLA back to the requester. Again, sending a notification back, your request has been completed. So those are all built in and can be set up with almost a few mouse clicks. We would use Orchestrator on something. Basically, if you're going to use a PowerShell script to try to solve some problem on a computer, then you could use Orchestrator to do that. We also use Orchestrator to manage a lot of our OM agent installs and things like that.
Okay, thanks.
Another question?
Hi. We're a pretty small shop. I'm a man of many hats. And we're budgeted for a POC this year to have a product like this that's going to have the like help desk capabilities and change management. My question is, what type of commitment am I looking for implementation since I'm a one-man show? I mean, is it something that I could roll out like I have with Operations Manager and Configuration Manager and over a couple months handle it? Or is this something where I should consider outsourcing and bringing Microsoft in to work with me to get this POC stood up, knowing that we've got a lot of things to funnel down into one new system?
So it's kind of hard for me, since I don't know your environment, how complex it is, but let me kind of give you a sense of our team. So in my case, I was a project manager. I ran the project. I have a full-time system administrator that basically, you know, does a lot of the management pack work, does a lot of the view changes or role changes and those kinds of things. He also does other stuff. It's not even full-time for him. And then we used two developers. I would say there was probably a total of four man months of development, both SM10 and SM12 combined. And that was a total team. And, you know, our implementation is pretty large and very customized, so it doesn't take a lot of work. If I was a smaller organization, I basically just wanted to bring up a service catalog and I wanted to automate, or not automate, but I wanted to have a system to manage alerts coming in, you really don't need to customize anything. Again, if you're a single environment, you don't have to handle a lot of the multi-partnering that I had to implement. And if you can convince people to use the kind of built-in categories and things like that, you know, it's probably a couple of months of a basically a program manager communicating and, you know, bringing people on, rolling out a pilot, and getting it going. The installation itself is 4 or 5 hour process. And that's soup to nuts, right? That's bringing up SharePoint, bringing up SQL Server, installing Service Manager is, you know, a few clicks, and boom, you have your environment up and running. So I don't think it's a real high investment. If anything, the hardest part is sitting down with support teams and understanding what is it they need, and getting them to go from the tool they're on today that has some capabilities and idiosyncrasies. So I took the approach that you know, I don't want to reinvent their processes. And so if people wanted to use 3 levels of category, I said, fine, I'll just change category and we'll have 3 levels. Or if they wanted category and subcategory as 2 list fields, so that information tab that I added, that was basically going around to teams and saying, how do you, you know, what information do you need? And they told me, again, the status codes, you know, we had a lot of status codes. One could argue we should have less, but I didn't try to fight that. I just, tell me what you need, I'll put it into the system, and then we'll go forward.
All right, thank you. You helped a lot.
Question.
When you were talking about dynamic routing, I lost track of, was that an out-of-the-box function or was that one of your extensions?
It's one of our extensions. So it uses an out-of-box workflow. Explain to it how it works. So every IR and SR come into the system, there's a workflow on create that fires and calls a program. So that program then is looking up the data. So we have 5 levels of support engineers, and it'll add the knowledge base article, but that's a piece of C code, C#, C++ code,
okay,
that's running. And it'll then also look into the database and say, oh, for this group of servers or for this server, this event ID, do I have any routes? Okay. And if it does, then when it's routing, all you're doing is you're setting the support group. So that was all done. That's all custom in our code.
Okay. And when someone responds to a service manager email and it flipped the status to new email, mm-hmm. was that out of the box or was that an extension?
That's out of box. That's built in with the Exchange connector. Okay. The Exchange connector doesn't ship with the product. It's I don't know whether it's CodePlex or it's not currently supported, but it's a free download.
Okay.
And my understanding is the Exchange connector, which I think is critical to the system, will be supported as part of the product in the next release.
Okay. And the PowerShell scripts that do your auto-grooming, mm-hmm. how are they interacting with Service Manager? Are they using the PowerShell commandlets or calling yep. stored procedures?
They're called SMLETs, S-M-L-E-T-S, and they're a CodePlex project, and you download them, install them once. And they're there, and we make extensive use of them. Basically, everything you can do in the console, you can do you create an IR, route an IR, okay. and you're using those SMLets, yeah.
And are those running directly on your front-end servers, those PowerShell scripts?
They are, yeah.
Okay, and what triggers them?
Well, so we have a workflow that fires off every night okay. and runs a couple of PowerShell scripts. And that's how all the grooming. So again, that's a built-in workflow, PowerShell scripts we wrote, and it'll go through and check and do the grooming for us.
Okay, thanks.
And in those cases, I mean, those PowerShell scripts are 15, 20 lines. They're not terribly complicated. If I could build them, they can't be terribly complicated. Question?
Yeah. So you showed the catalog, your catalog kind of item editor where you can have fields that are required or not required. How extensible is that in the sense that maybe I want something that if they answer yes to one question, I need the next field to say be required or not be required. Or if they say select something from my CMDB and they say server A, and so if they say server A, you need to approve it. If they say server B, I need to approve it.
Yep.
So are those kind of capabilities in the box or is it extensible?
So they're not. And I completely agree with you. That's a design change request that I've already opened with the product team saying question dependencies. Mm-hmm. So if, like I said, if you selected number 3 up here, I have 3 more questions for you. That's come up a lot in our design. But it's not, that capability doesn't exist in this.
Is it something that you could even extend? Through SharePoint something, or is it really?
I don't think so.
Right.
Yeah, you have a lot of flexibility if you're willing to write web parts. Again, this is code on how it's displayed. See, could you do it? Well, conceivably, if you wrote your own web part, then you're in the code, and then you had the questions in there, but you'd have to come up with kind of a design as to how to do it. So you could probably do it by writing your own web part.
All right. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Hi, I got 2 questions. First question, do you plan to implement something like a site hierarchy like it is in Config Manager at the moment, especially for, let's say an IT that has several IT-supported subsidiaries, for example, or what would be the best practice for several IT-supported subsidiaries?
So I'm not sure I understand your question. So do we use Config Manager to bring server configuration information and compliance information into Service Manager? We do.
No, yeah,
basically
I know.
Goes
I know
to
that.
The data warehouse.
I know that. But the problem is in our case, we have several IT-supported subsidiaries. What would be the best practice for all the small IT teams outside? I'm working in the central IT subsidiary in our case. And we have several subsidiaries where only 2 or 3 guys are sitting and they have to work with the console. And the problem is if they work over the internet line, it won't be possible probably, I'm pretty sure. And that's why I'm asking if there is a plan to implement something like a site hierarchy to do something like an SQL replication to the subsidiary or if it's... do you know what I mean?
I think I'm following you. So, yeah, the branch office kind of environment.
Yeah, something like a branch office.
It's hard for me to answer because if the subsidiaries are really separate, they're their own OM and everything else is completely separate, but you just help them with central planning, then it probably makes sense for each of them to have their own SM environment. And then the location and network speed and whatnot. Like I said, our support engineers in Microsoft are worldwide. They're in India and China, and they're all over the place. And we have one central service manager. The multiple front ends isn't a replication, so I can't put a server in India and then have them connect there. It always has to come back to the CMDB and draw data. And so you definitely have to look at your network capabilities because the console can pull a lot of data depending on how you set up your views.
Yeah, because if I perform an extra installation on the branch office, let's say, then we will lose all the synergies
You have. Would, and it would be hard to keep them. Okay. You know, you could build the management packs for them, but if there's an administrator out there, they're going to start going in different directions.
Okay. And second question is much shorter, I promise. Do you plan to implement something like an RTF field in incident forms or on the self-service portal? Because if you create a new incident, you always have only the chance to put a file as attachment and not to put something like a screenshot. Our customers complain every time that they don't have the chance to make a screenshot and put it straight to the incident.
So if I understand your question, so there is an attachment capability. So when I create a service request, I can add an attachment.
Of course, yeah. I know.
And then what you're saying, when I go back to the portal in the my and look at mine, there's no I can't add an attachment there.
I can't add any screenshot. If I have a problem with my PC, let's say, and I open the self-service portal and I want to create the incident, and then I use the snipping tool to get the screenshot straight away to the incident, I always have to save it first and then attach it.
Well, I mean,
That's the problem.
You can't really send them a giant bitmap stuck in mail.
Exactly.
The other way you can do it, though, is so when we reply back that a service request has been opened, we put bracket SR and the number on the top. That's how when they reply to it, it's recorded to them. And so what we tell people to do is if you have additional attachments, just reply to the mail, add the attachment that will go back into the SR, record the mail coming in, mark the status as new mail, and those attachments will be added to the SR.
Yeah, but the problem is if no attachment has been added and just a screenshot, then it won't get the attachment and it won't save the attachment.
It's got to be a file.
That's a good
point. I'll think about feature. It, see if we can open a change request in some way to do that. But.
Okay, finished. All right. Thanks.
Next question. Okay. I'll take a couple more questions here.
Okay. My name is Marat Kondish. We are a top partner for Service Manager. I can understand what Microsoft did for this version of the product. We have only one request. We see that you in Microsoft use almost completely different version of Service Manager, to be frank. It's very customized. And we as a partner very interested in the information how you did it, actually. Especially currently we have some issues with OLAP cubes, which is a very exciting improvement, but we also want to create some additional dimensions, maybe some additional jobs like you did for your infrastructure.
Yeah.
But so currently we have almost zero information about how to do it. If you will provide this information, it will be very, very useful because, you know, the customization for Service Manager is almost everything.
Yeah, I'm having a hard time, I think, through the microphone, understanding your questions. I'll be around down in front.
Okay.
Stay around. I can try again. So one last question, I guess.
How do you manage changes to templates? Do you have someone in your team that updates templates, change requests, service request offerings?
It's very easy to update the templates.
Yeah, but I mean, is it done by someone in the in your own team, or is it someone else in another
both.
Team?
Both. We let any administrator to the system, and some of our partners have administrators that we'll let them update and add their own templates, or they can send a request to us to say, "Would you add me a template?" And then our administrator of the whole system would add a template or change a template.
My other question is, when do you import new management packs to Service Manager? We experience that when we import a management pack, it will affect the console, the end users. So it will
There are definitely cases where, depending on the management pack, so we plan management pack upgrades fairly carefully. We almost think of that as a change release, yeah. Because if you're extending classes and whatnot, you know, definitely everybody who's using the console has to close and reopen it if you've imported management packs. So typically we'll do them at night and just send out a notification to our service engineer saying we've made these changes. Okay. Normally we're announcing the changes anyway and remind them to open and close the console. And you can, like for example, if you make a class change to incident or service request, you know, it resets the last touch date on all service requests and or incidents. So you definitely want to test your management pack changes. They're pretty easy to do, but you can impact the total system. Okay.
Do you save templates in a separate managed pack that only contains templates?
I didn't understand.
Do you save templates? Store templates?
Oh yes. Of the 24, so basically we have a management pack that saves all our lists. We have a management pack that saves all of our templates. So we keep a separate management pack. They're not sealed management packs, so that you can add new ones to it. And then we export them periodically for recovery, disaster recovery purposes.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. All right. Thank you, everyone.